Thursday that they've activated their 5G ultra-wideband network in parts of Minneapolis and Chicago. This is a carrier expects to bring that technology to 30 cities in the United States at some point in 2019. Fox News technology contributor Brett Larson with more on 5G.
To get it right now, you need to have, there's one Motorola phone that has a 5G attachment. It's a mod that you can put onto it. And then you need to be in a certain part of Minneapolis or Chicago to get that 5G service.
Okay.
Oh, and you have to pay $10 extra every month. So it's a very limited amount of bandwidth. And that's actually the problem. This 5G rollout has been very interesting to see. They've been talking about it for several years, but it is using a new type of technology. It's using something they're calling millimeter waves, which are these very high-frequency radio waves that they're having a bit of a challenge with. They're affected by weather. They're affected by, you know, they can't penetrate building walls and things like that. So with 5G, it's this massive amount of infrastructure that they have to put in. They can't just upgrade towers like we did when we went from 3G to 4G LTE, where it's, oh, we're going to put a new piece of equipment, run some new cables.
Is it worth the investment?
I think it will absolutely be worth the investment in the long run.
Sears and Kmart are rolling out new slogans as part of their rebranding effort. Sears says it will use the phrase, making moments matter, in an upcoming TV and social media ad campaign. Kmart, meanwhile, will feature the tagline, love where you live. Both stores are trying to win back shoppers after emerging from bankruptcy. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
That's our signal to tell you what's going on with the weather here in Hunterdon County. And unfortunately, I don't have really, really good news for you. There's a chance of rain this evening. Well, not even this evening, tonight. Hopefully when you're fast asleep here, it'll be mostly cloudy till then. But we can expect rain during the night. We can also expect rain mostly tomorrow, perhaps starting a little bit more heavily after the commute. But we'll have rain most of the day and tomorrow night. So with that, I hope we have a lot better news as we go forward with the rest of the show. So welcome to your County at Work. This is Suzanne Legay, your host, and we're streaming live from HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. Your County at Work aims to bring information and behind-the-scenes human interest stories of the men and women who provide vital services for Hunterdon County and its citizenry, much of which you'd never know about if you didn't hear from us right here at Your County at Work. So I'm glad you've joined us today. We're here every first Thursday. I have to get this correct. Every first Thursday of the month from 4 to 5. And today we're going to be talking about one of those vital services that you probably don't hear much about unless we bring them to you and talk a little bit about it. We're going to be talking about preparedness, Hunterdon County preparedness, and what does that involve. Our guest today is Janice Ray Clark. She is a registered nurse, and she's the Preparedness Division Supervisor at Hunterdon County Health Department. She has a Bachelor of Science in Nursing, a BSN from Kane University. She's been nursing, by the looks of her, it's amazing to me. She's been nursing for 13 years with a pretty diverse background in oncology, correctional nursing, right? I assume you worked at one of the prisons?
I worked at a county jail, actually.
County jail, okay. Long-term care, geriatrics, and outpatient. But now you're working with the Hunterdon County Health Department in preparedness. Welcome, Janice.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I think first question is, what does a nurse in preparedness do? I understand you're a public health nurse.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
So preparedness started in 2003 after the anthrax attacks that happened here in Hamilton, New Jersey, and 9/11. And they really came to a realization. I'm still a nurse school.
But CDC and public health in general kind of came to a realization that we were not prepared for really large-scale emergencies like that, especially with things that have, like, a public health nature. And so that's kind of how the program was born. It is a grant-funded program through the CDC and New Jersey Department of Health.
CDC?
Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, which is, like, the nationwide public health So they, the Centers for Disease Control and New Jersey Department of Health and a lot of other public health organizations realized we weren't prepared. And so how do we prepare for those things? So they came up with a core set of capabilities that public health should be focused on for emergencies. And some of those are, I had to write them down because there was no way I would remember all of them, public information and warning. So that's really a public education piece, educating the public about different types of preparedness activities.
So that's not necessarily in an event. It's preparatory.
Yep.
This is all about preparedness,
yep.
Right?
Okay, yep. Great. So yes. Educating the public before even something happens.
Yes.
Information sharing, which is between all of our partners and stakeholders. So how do you keep those lines of communication open? Who would you contact during an emergency? But making sure you have all that information beforehand because you do not want to, like, you know, Sandy blows through and you're like, oh, geez, I don't know who I was supposed to call. Like, you know, you want to make those relationships before something happens.
Sure.
Mass care and sheltering, I guess, is any, you know, sheltering during an emergency event. Medical countermeasure dispensing, which sounds really crazy. So that is mass medication of large populations of people during any type of public health crisis, like a pandemic or a bioterrorism attack, and making sure we have plans and the ability to do that. Medical material management and distribution, which is related to the previous one, and that's do we have plans to receive large stockpiles of medication? Where would we put it? How would we organize it? How would we inventory it? The organization of those supplies.
Yes.
Health surveillance and epidemiological investigations, which I think is what a lot of people think of when they hear public health, and that's sort of just kind of keeping your eye out, like, you know, and we have systems, a lot of electronic systems in place to check to see if, you know, there's too many visits in the emergency department or things going on in the state that, you know, wait, is it flu season? Why are we seeing kind of influenza-like illness, like those kind of things? And the last one is volunteer management and responder health and safety. We do house a group of volunteers in Hunterdon County Public Health Department. They're called our Medical Reserve Corps, or MRC, and keeping those volunteers engaged and also making sure they have the training and the capability to help us, keeping them their health and safety in mind if we were to deploy them for some type of event. And those are the main areas that we concentrate on.
And I would assume that we're going to do a little bit of a deeper dive
we
talk. And I just want to clear up when you say we house that department, you mean they office with you?
Yes, yes. So we have part of us is, yeah, they don't all like live with us or anything. No, we love our volunteers, but we don't have room for them to all stay there. Yeah, we have a volunteer coordinator, and we set up training for them, all different types of training events, CPR, Narcan, what to do if we were to open a shelter, what could their role possibly be in helping people coming to the shelter.
Well, I really do want to know a little bit more about that, because this is the meat of really of what you're here to tell us about. How'd you come to this, number one? And number two is, what do you do in this role? It sounds like there's a lot of activity and a lot of planning and preparation, of course, for the preparedness. But so how did you come to it, and what do you actually do, Janice?
Yeah, sure. So I've been with the health department now 3 years, and I kind of didn't really even know that this existed. I knew that there were all other areas of nursing. I knew, you know, generally what a public health nurse did, but not this particular area. And a really good friend of mine, I've been friends with her since high school, she also works for the health department, and she was like, oh, you should interview for this public health job. And so, you know, I went in, I interviewed, and then, you know, it was really a lot of on-the-job learning, but at the same time, it was...
Sorry.
It's okay.
Distraction.
I feel like all my other areas of nursing, like, led me up to this. All my other areas of nursing, like, really kind of led me up to this, like mass care and sheltering. You're sheltering those vulnerable populations, people that, you know, maybe are ill enough to maybe kind of be in a nursing home, but they're still at home. And, you know, I'd worked in that long-term care and nursing geriatric experience for a while. And so, you know, prepping for those types of populations to come into a shelter, you know, and it's, a lot of it is organizing yourself and making sure you have the plans, which, you know, I think all of nursing is really kind of founded upon. You're always planning in nursing, and now instead of planning for maybe like that one or two patients or, you know, that handful of patients that you have for your shift, I'm planning for like 126,000 people that live in Hunterdon County.
I I have to tell you my bias here, because I've been in lots of roles in my career where I've been in a hiring position. And I always say, if you have a, you know, more than one, if you have two or three or so candidates that all appear to have, the, you know, relatively similar qualifications, go for the nurse with the background because of that planning. The other thing is because of the ability, in my opinion, now this is my bias, but I'm talking to a nurse, so why not? The ability to make a decision and to act on your own. And I think that those, the planning and the carry through and the not, you know, the making a decision when it really counts because of the training and the experience. So, once a nurse, now I always tell people I'm a recovering nurse because once you're a nurse, you never get over that. But those qualities, I think, and I'm going to say that, that, I think our health department and our public health nurse division is really, really qualified with the nurses we have in terms of those characteristics at least. So you're feeling pretty strong in the planning, and it sounds like as we go through, Janice and I had a few moments to talk before going on the air, and with all that list that you just gave to us, the planning for each one of them could stymie anybody, right?
Yeah.
So on a day-to-day basis, what's your world like?
Sometimes it's really boring. Sometimes it's me going through checking, did we update this plan? What is this piece looking like? And other times it's a little more exciting, especially when we do exercises to practice for these events, and that's much more exciting, a little bit more stressful. It's almost, like I've told people before, it's almost like planning for your wedding, but like we do a minimum of about an exercise a year. So sometimes it's like planning multiple weddings in 1 year. Like you have to book the venue where you're going to have that exercise. You got to get that all squared away. You have to invite people. You have to make sure you're inviting the right people. So you're sending out save the dates. You're sending out like actual, you know, not as fancy as wedding invitations, but you're sending out invitations, and you have to get all those people. Do they know what they're going to do when they get to the exercise? So you have to set up training for them so that they understand that. Sometimes, like, when you're in the craziness of this, you realize that your written plans don't actually match what you're doing in real life. So then you got to go back to the drawing board with that, and then you got to rewrite all those the written plans and move steps around, and this comes before that. And then, you know, you get there, you get all the supplies, too, all the supplies that you might have to bring to the exercise, and then you get there, you run the exercise, and it goes by in, like, a total whirlwind, and you're like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe that's over. And then you have to start at part of what we do it at the end of every exercise too is what we call a hot wash, and we ask people, how do you feel it went, what do you think we can improve upon, and that's really the most important piece. And then you take all those suggestions and then you go all the way back to the drawing board, and then sometimes you have to redo your plans entirely, sometimes you have to tweak the plans a little bit, and then you use that as your platform for the next exercise. So then you're like, okay, we have to fix, you know, X, Y, and Z, and now let's try it this way for this exercise. And then sometimes you're like, oh, wow, that really worked. And then other times you're like, yeah, that's not going to happen.
Janice, of all the areas that you listed, and I'm not going to ask you to repeat them one at a time here, but how many of those actually require that in-depth kind of prep training and review?
All of them do.
Oh, wow. We really do have to address the telephone here. It's okay.
So anyway, sorry about that.
Busy lady.
Yeah, sorry. It's always something. So anyway.
But no reading.
Yeah. what am I doing here? Okay, let me just turn the whole thing off.
Okay.
All of them require exercising. So we exercise from... So the public information and warning piece. So we do practice twice a year with the state and all of our staff, and they basically give us like a fake scenario. The most recent one we did was cryptosporidium, which is a waterborne illness outbreak, and they give you like a fake news outcast.
It's not working.
Sorry. Of course, of all the people, it's my husband, and he knows I'm on the radio, so I don't know why he would call me now.
Well, at least it's not an emergency. Our audience knows
yeah,
that you're,
not,
they're
there's
safe.
No emergency here in Huntington
County.
You're safe
for the next half hour or so. That's right. It's probably about milk or butter
yeah,
or something.
Who knows? Sorry about that. So, anyway,
So each of those areas require
four areas. Yeah, do require an exercise. So the, like I was saying, the last exercise was a cryptosporidium. The state will give us like a fake news release and like a fake social media post, and they'll start you from the ground up. Like there's this outbreak in your community. What do you tell the public? What do you tell your community? How do they prevent it? Do they think that they were exposed? What should they do if they're exposed? Then they even they'll have people pretend to call you like they're the public, and they'll explain to you, you know, hi, I'm like John Smith, and I think I was exposed. What do I do? And then, you know, are you giving them the correct answers? And they actually grade you on it. Luckily, we always score really well. and then we have to create a press release. You know, so we do practice that twice a year. Same thing with the information sharing between us, county, other county health departments. We usually do like just real quick exercises. With different radios and things like that. That's usually a real quick one, just like, can you hear me? Yep, good. Where everything's working, we're good to go. the mass care and sheltering, we usually practice that at least once a year, unless we have a real event, which this past February we did put the shelter on standby during that series of storms.
Yes.
So we were on standby for that. Last year we did put this shelter...
I'm going to stop you there.
Go ahead.
What's on standby mean? In other words, what's the preparedness for that versus the go?
Gotcha. So standby is when, so we really do this in conjunction with emergency management. We work very closely with them. And
Huntington County Office of Emergency Management.
They will, they're really like the, we follow their direction. So for example, for this past storm in February, they saw that about 12% of the county was without power. And we were kind of, or is it going to be more? Is it going to be less? Like then, so once they start to see that there could be a need for people to seek shelter because of power outages or things like that, that's when they'll say, go ahead and start to activate, but don't actually set up. So we start to make sure the location where we're going is it open? You know, do we have to maybe get keys or move
does it
around?
Have power?
Does it have power? Luckily, our sites have generators, so that's usually not a problem. Although one time we went to open a shelter last year, and then they told us it had no heat, and then we had to, at the very last minute, switch the location, which was a little crazy. But we pulled together, and we did it. So we always got to check the site
first. But I think that's important for our residents, our audience, to know, and that is that generators are there, that facilities that are to be used are prepped and ready to be used. And in a rare case where you wouldn't have heat or something, that's a big surprise. But you practice enough, one would guess, right?
Yeah.
That you can make those kind of adjustments.
Yeah. So it was a crazy surprise. But I work with a great group of people, and we really pulled together. And we were like, all right. And then you know they were like, okay, these are the alternate locations, and where are we going to go? And
is it possible that you slow down
I'm from
fast.
New Jersey.
Well, it's interesting, but I just want people to be able to capture what you're saying.
Thank you. Sorry,
it's okay.
So yeah, that's really the first basic steps, and then we have it so that in our location where our supplies are kept, that it's we have basically like what we call like go kits. And so there's enough material to run the shelter for the first operational period, which is about 12 hours, ready to go. So do we have a truck to move that or, you know, vehicles to move that? So then we start looking into that. We also put a call out to our staff and our Medical Reserve Corps volunteers saying the shelter's going on standby. There's a possibility that it will open within, you know, the next 12 to 48 hours.
So these volunteers, as well as the paid staff, get a call at 2:22 a.m., right?
Well, hopefully, this last time it was at 10 o'clock in the morning, so it wasn't too bad.
But it's conceivably.
But it could. It could happen. Yeah, emergency management could contact me at any minute. You know, that's why I have my phone was going off.
Yeah.
But yeah, they could contact me at any point and say, you know, this is going to happen. So then we put a call out to our staff and our volunteers, and we say, you know, this is the estimated time frame in which we could open, which, again, we follow the guidance of emergency management on that. And we, you know, start to put, like, a mock schedule together. Like, can you start here? And then we start to fill in the roles. So, you know, we might need a nurse. We're going to need a shelter manager, someone to run logistics, like getting extra supplies if we need them.
And most of those folks are staff.
The real critical roles are we do have some really excellent volunteers, though, that have done a lot of work with us.
Okay.
And we do have some of them really trained for that, too.
Aren't we lucky?
Yeah, we're really lucky. And so we start to kind of gear up, yes. but not necessarily set that shelter up. So it is a little stressful, though, because, you know, like at any minute, they could be calling you to tell you, go ahead and set that up.
Yes.
So you're like a little bit on like, you know, oh, what's going to happen? But, you know, this luckily this past February, they decided, you know, the numbers were going down as were, you know, for power outages and things were looking good. And, you know, go ahead, you can stop the standby then. And then we wait for emergency management to, you know, give us the all clear. And then we, you know, we let our volunteers and our staff know, by the way, we're not, you know, they say we're not on the horizon to open. And then everybody just like, you breathe a sigh of relief. And you're like, okay, good, we made it through that. But like I said, last March when we had those two back-to-back nor'easters,
yes,
that
yes.
was a little, that was a little more tense because we did open. We had to open in a spot where we had no plans for. but we did it. We made it. And, you know, a little more stressful again. But
so the planning exists in what's called for and how do you provide it, not necessarily where.
We have several locations. We tend to wait for emergency management to go ahead and announce them, so we don't always, you know, give those locations. We do have a primary location and a backup location as to where we would open.
Okay, good. And emergency management must practice with you, one would assume.
Okay. Oh, yeah, we have a very close relationship with them. They know all of our plans. We invite them to all of our exercises. They're very involved.
Time to have them on too to find out.
So, and we have a great relationship with them, and you know, same thing too. Like they'll see something
very savvy team.
Yeah, and they'll see something at an exercise too, and they're like, you know what, you know, maybe try it this way, and you know, it's really good to you know have them to bounce ideas off of too. Because
I think the whole health department has a wonderful relationship with emergency management and vice versa. So,
yeah, and it's great because there are a lot of times where the two worlds come together and. Like kind of like what I said in the beginning before, like you always want to have that relationship with someone not during that emergency.
Sure.
So that's, you know, works
Tell
out.
Us about one of these drills. Tell us, so you're on alert, right? For, what was the last one you drilled for?
So the last one we did.
The waterborne thing.
Yeah. So that, Cryptosporidius.
Thank you. This is a recovering nurse saying that thing. Excuse me, world.
We get that information from the state. That one is not as exciting because it's what they call a functional exercise, and it's just the exchange of information.
Okay.
So, yeah. So that one's not, like, real exciting.
Well, give us an exciting one.
That one, you're just kind of sitting behind your desk. You're waiting to receive all these emails from the state. You come together as a team. All right, what are our talking points? What are the most important things we want to tell people about crypto?
I'm going to stop you. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Sure, no,
I keep
it's okay.
It
to, go ahead.
When you say tell people... So our listeners are saying, well, I just happened to pick up this radio show. You know, how am I ever going to know when that happens? So when you say tell people, how is it that you communicate with the public that needs to know?
So we do have a Facebook page. We have a Twitter. We have a relationship with another radio station that would accept our press releases. We have a really good relationship with 100 and Helpline, which... they're also really great too. You should have them on here too.
Yes. They have their own show, but
they
show up in many emergencies and many needs.
Yeah.
They're right there.
And people, I think in Hunterdon County know to call them
when
there's an emergency.
Yes.
So we have a good relationship with them. We have an agreement that during an emergency, we would contact them to put information out so that if people start calling them for some reason, they would have the correct information to provide to them.
Does 911 do anything like that? No.
I'm not sure. That's really like more... This one
that would
so
be a high like, alert emergency.
Yeah. This isn't so much like, oh my God, I need to go to the hospital right away kind of phone call, but more like, I think, you know, for crypto, since it's waterborne, it was the scenario the state gave us was in a swimming pool at a local gym.
Okay.
And it would be more like, oh, hi, you know, I go to that gym and I swam in that pool. Like, what's happening? What's going to happen to me?
Yes.
And it's like, well, what are the most important things to tell that person?
Yes.
And how do you deliver that message.
And so it's Facebook, it's
Facebook, Twitter, phone calls. We prepare for, you know, phone calls. You know, our partners in the community, like 100 and Helpline.
Yes.
How else do we do it? Press releases.
So our listening or viewing audience here can rest assured that if something they need to know about, there's a common vehicle.
Yes.
That's enabled for them to find out.
Oh, yep.
Okay, and they don't have to wait for the weekly newspaper.
No. And especially if it's
those days are over.
Yeah. And again, we practice it twice a year with the state, so we're very well-versed in that type of situation.
Is there a story, though, about something like that, that the drill that you can tell us that really is something that's a little unusual or something that engages you in a different than normal way? Certainly not behind the desk, but maybe in action. I thought I saw a request for volunteers to be actors in a drill.
So we're looking for, that's coming up on May 18th. We are asking that people either join a community emergency response team, which is CERT, or they can join our Medical Reserve Corps, and then we'll provide you with the training to be the actor in that exercise. And that's with a group we have with northern municipalities in the county that would come together to help us if we needed to medicate everybody in the county at one time. They would.
But whatever caused that.
So that's really like the real worst case scenario.
I'm holding my today. I don't know what this is. I'm holding my earphones. I'm holding my mic. Go ahead. Sorry.
That's okay. That's really like the worst case scenario situation of like bioterrorism or pandemic. I mean, really, you know, like I always say, we're going to talk about it. We're going to plan about it. We're going to train people on it. And then that's it. We're never going to do it ever again. So on May 18th, we're actually practicing with them to hand out medication. So if there's anybody that's interested, I can, you know, I'll give you my email at the end. We can get you set up with your community emergency response team for your municipality, and you can get the training through them, or you can come and get the training through us through the Medical Reserve Corps, and then we can get you going with how to help on that front.
Okay. So I keep taking you down these little spider things. So you're going to tell us now about one of these drills and what it's like.
So I guess one of when you write an exercise, there's some people that will tell you, like, oh, you really have to, like, put these, like, they call them injects. And people want, like, these real crazy injects. Like, the building burns down in the middle of giving out meds, and then what do you do? And I'm like, yeah. So this was one of the very first exercises that I ever helped create. And it was where you pretend to receive medication from the state, and then you hand it out to, first responders and what we call fixed facilities, which are, it's any kind of facility, really, that wants to sign up to be this program. And then you would get medication.
Well, no. Yeah. So they don't know what a fixed facility is.
So a fixed facility is a any business, government agency, things like of that nature, churches, any group of people that sign up with the health department. And they would get medication during, you know, and we're talking, again, the absolute worst case scenario. We don't do this for, like, normal little outbreaks or anything like that. Absolute last, you know, worst case scenario, we would give you the medication. You know, you would come to our location. We would give you the medication enough for your staff or the members of your group and your and their family members. And then, you know, they would go back to their location, wherever their business or, you know, we have some churches and things like that. And then they would hand out the medication.
So they say, use our facilities, use our folks and our volunteers.
Yep.
We will help in whatever way you tell us. And,
yep.
Okay, good.
And then,
nice.
And then the alternative to that is everybody stands in a line in a school gym somewhere and they receive medication there. So
okay.
We always like to practice with the fixed facilities, too, so that
sure.
They understand, you know, they would need to come with, you know, some companies are really big and, you know, they would take like a pallet of meds. So they need to understand, like, you got to bring a truck. So we get this all set up with them and get them all geared up to pretend to take medication. We have all these little empty pill bottles that we pretend and we hand them out the medication. And so this was like one of the very first exercises that I ever helped on. And so, you know, we pretend to take the meds. We're getting all things set up. And then they were telling me, oh, you really should put a lot of injects in here. Like, you know, like the building, you know, like the building burns down or whatever. And I was like, you know what? I don't think we really need to do that. And so that's kind of been like my little thing for every exercise now, because you know what happens is things happen in real life that you couldn't have written in there. So for this example, the trailer to bring the pallets of the empty pill bottles got a flat tire. So now what do we do?
Yes.
I'm like, oh my God, the meds, there's a flat tire. Like, now I couldn't have like written that in there.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we're like, oh my God. Okay. So luckily someone had a little, like air compressor and they thought, okay, all right, good. Thank God. What's the, things start going along again. We're, all of a sudden, none of the toilets in the women's bathroom are working. And we're like, oh, God.
What
so
are
now
the
we
chances
have to call a maintenance
that, right?
person. So that's why I'm always like, don't write anything crazy in, because real life will happen and something crazy. And it's good for the exercise, too, because now you're like, okay, who do we contact now that the toilets aren't working here? Okay, we have a facilities contact. That's the person who has to come in. And it's like, So that's always my thing now is people are like, oh, you know, put something in crazy, and you know, like a light
if you've been policy. There, yeah. Right. If you've been there, you know, it gets crazy anyway.
Yeah. So, you know, luckily none of that threw off us being able to hand out the medication to our fixed facilities and our first responders. They came, they got their fake pill bottles and, you know, everything went fine. But it does, you know, you're so concerned about like the main piece of the exercise and then all these other little things start happening and you're like, oh my God. But, you know, it. That's what you're there for, is to practice. And what if that did happen in real life? Like, what if we were running this, you know, we were handing out medication and all the toilets stopped working? Like, what if the trailer with the meds couldn't get there because the tire was flat? Like, what, you know, so it's, it, to me, I'm always like, you know what? Don't worry about it. Real life will happen and things will happen and we'll pull together and we'll get through it. And
receive high marks in these trainings. I know that the county gets reports back about how these go, and they're always exemplary. Our listeners need to know that we that we get high marks for our preparedness
we
in
do.
Hunterdon County and our drills.
We are responsible for an audit every other year. It's called the Operational Readiness Review, and it's put together by mainly by Centers for Disease Control and also New Jersey Department of Health, who does like the main chunk of the audit. And our we weren't graded this year, so we just kind of do it as a practice on the years we aren't graded. But the year that we were graded before that, we were called a, I think they said we were like a model of exemplary practice for the state of New Jersey.
Yes, I remember, yes.
So, you know, it is fun, and then when you're doing the exercises and when you're putting all these things together, you are kind of, you know, having fun. But in the same point, when somebody steps back and they really do look at all the work that you're doing, you know, then, you know, you're proud of yourself. You're like, wow, you know.
Yes. And in the reality, I mean, in the drill, yes, but in reality, you know, it's the end user. It's the person you're trying to protect and will protect that stays foremost in your mind, one would assume. So the seriousness then of that becomes there. You know, there are no flat tires.
Yeah.
Because that gets remediated.
Yes. Yep. Oh, real quick. You know, like I said, we found someone, they had an air compressor and boom, it was fixed pretty quickly. But
yes.
So it's probably, you know, one of the more like nerve-wracking ones. And then it's always whenever you do an exercise, I always tell everybody, like, I remember that first, always it's like the first 20 minutes, it's like, oh my God, people, do they know what they do, what they're doing? Are they handing out the right medication? Do they know which way to walk through the setup? And like, are they able to navigate it and find where they need to get their pills? And then all of a sudden it gets like, all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, yeah, they're doing it. Like, it's working. And then, you know, you feel kind of a sense of relief, like, oh, okay, we're going to make it through.
So tell me, between you and the OEM, which is Office of Emergency Management, in a drill or in the reality of this whole thing, what do you do, you personally, as the preparedness nurse, right, or supervisor of preparedness? What's your role in the actual emergency or
so
incident?
I always joke around about this. I'm like, don't, you know, let me be the boots on the ground. Like, I want to be there helping. Because we have what's called the Emergency Operations Center, and that's like where all the like the decision makers are. And, you know, we're going to move this here and that there, and this is where we're going to get these people from. And I'm always like, don't ever put me in that seat. I don't want to be doing that, because I'll know that, you know, people are going to be out there and needing my help. And so if we did have to do that, I would be there on the front lines, you know, handing out that medication to people, making sure they're getting the right medication. When we're in a shelter, you know, I'm the nurse that's in that shelter, and if there's people there that have a medical issue, that's what I'm doing. So I'm always like, don't ever put me in the decision-making seat. Like, you know, and that's the plans for it now, is that I would be part of that boots on the ground, the actual operations of the procedure.
Okay. And then the debrief of that then.
So for the exercises, like I said before, we always do a debrief at the end, or what we call a hot wash. And in real life too, when we did have to set up the shelter last March, you know, I got everybody together that was involved in that. And, you know, we go through everything, you know, what's going on and what can we improve and where can we make better planning.
And besides that conversation, how do those things get solidified, Janice?
Well, we always go back and redo the plans.
Okay.
And so you start there. And then we always do staff and volunteer training. So, you know, maybe we did it this way last year. We're going to change it. We're going to do it this way this year. We're actually going to, that's coming up soon. We do a shelter manager training every year, the beginning of hurricane season, just as like a little refresh. So this year I'll sit down with all my people that are going to be, you know, my leaders in the shelter, and I'll let them know, you know, what's going on. Maybe some things have changed. You know, some of it is like just maybe updating phone numbers, making sure you have all the right phone numbers. We do, you know, a training on it. And we always look at the previous exercise or anything from before and make our improvements there. We train, and then we do it all over again.
Okay, so you go from the perhaps medical emergency to the force of nature emergency to the nefarious, right? And,
yeah.
In terms of that whole range that, yeah.
We try to make what they call all hazards planning. So it really won't matter what the scenario is. So whether
okay.
the scenario is bioterrorism or a pandemic, like if you needed to medicate 126,000 people in Hunterdon County, you know, it doesn't matter what the disease is. How do you do that?
Yes.
Same thing. It doesn't matter if we're opening a shelter because of a weather emergency or, like, I don't know, like a black hole opens up and swallows half the, like, it, you
Let's
know.
Let's not do
you,
that.
No. obviously, here in Hunterdon County, it's going to be like, it's a weather issue, but it doesn't matter what that
weather. Power often.
Yeah,
things
power
like that,
usually.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what the issue is. You're opening a shelter. Here's the steps. So that's why we try to focus in that kind of.
And the cause then is less significant, unless, of course, it's something that would require what, isolation or separation or people staying confined or something like that.
Yeah,
huh?
And even then we have plans, you know. So for example, if you want to talk about isolating people, if you or you want to decontaminate someone, if you think they've been exposed to, you know,
something,
you're pretty much. That process, and that's where we work closely with our hazmat team, and we have a lot of plans that they would do that piece, that decontamination piece, and they have a lot
so
of training.
So they're involved
on that
as
too.
Well, hazmat.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of OEM and health.
Yes, yep.
Yeah.
And
we do the county, I should say, does a lot of this cross-training and cross-prep.
Which is good, too, because, you know, we all know each other, and we, you know, we all get along, and, you know, if that emergency does happen, it's all people, it's all friendly faces, people that we know, and we're prepared to handle it. And, but yeah, so anyway, like the procedures, we try to make the procedures the same, no matter what really the situation.
Okay. Now, I would assume that in any one of these things we talked about, whether we need to get meds out or whether we need to keep, I don't know, measles separated or that's far fetched, but, you know, any of these, natural occurrences or whatever, not everybody shows up at a shelter. But a lot of people need either help or certainly information. So we have folks listening to Hunterdon Chamber Radio streaming live right here today on Thursday the 4th. How do we reach individuals in terms of preparedness, Janice?
So
is that part of your job?
Yes. Educating the public is a huge piece of it because we do want people prepared. I always like to say one of the things that makes Hunterdon County is so great, the open space, and it's, you know, we're not Bergen County, where people are, like right on top of each other, is also what makes Hunterdon County so bad sometimes. Like, when we have a power outage, I live in Holland Township. There are parts of Holland Township during storms that those streets are impassable for, like, 7 or 10 days. And then how do you prepare for that? So we do go in front of all different types of groups, you know, you name it, we'll come out and speak to your group.
Well, name
too, about
it. Like churches?
Oh,
or?
No. We've gone to various senior services events. We're actually in the middle of a project right now where we're training our Medical Reserve Corps members how to educate others on being prepared as well.
Okay.
County Fair we've gone to. We're going to be at Community Day this year on June 1st.
Great.
We're going to be at another health fair at the end of this month at the United Way, and just partnering with, you know, our community partners, and then educating out through them.
So when you're at a mass venue like that,
yeah.
how is it literature you pass out, or
how
do you reach in a mass venue?
In a mass venue, we have tons of literature. We have a trifold display, and we try to. So for individual and family preparedness, we focus on that go bag. If you have to get up and get out right away, what should you have in there?
Good. So let's talk about that.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Should every family have a go bag?
Yes. Yes. And then every family, too, should also plan for if they have to stay in their house for a long period of time due to road closures or flooding or something like that.
Oh, good. So talk to us. This is good stuff, man.
you really need to be prepared for both. So for a go bag, or sometimes what they call a go bucket, especially if you're in an area that you're worried about flooding or water damage, then we definitely recommend like a bucket, which you can get one of those like Home Depot or Lowe's or one of those type of plastic buckets with the lid.
Yes.
And then you don't really have to worry about water damage too much. And then you want to put basic supplies in there.
Like?
So if you have glasses, if you have an extra pair, you want to put those in there. if you have if you're taking medication every day, you want to put at least a few days worth of meds in there. And if you aren't able to put any extra medicine in there, at least a list. Because if you do have to come to our shelter, if we have at least a list of medications, we have something we can work with. And we have community partners where we may be able to hold you over for a few days with some medicine. Any important documents that you think you might need, you can either make photocopies and put them in there, or we recommend you can put them on a thumb drive and keep the thumb drive in there. Batteries, flashlights.
This is really in-depth. This is great. This is great stuff.
Oh, thank you. Portable radios, phone charger. You might even, some people now might even not want the radio, and they'll just put, the extra phone charger in there. If you have the type of phone where you can take the battery out, you may want to keep an extra charged battery in there. If you have any type of medical issues or medical devices that are small enough to put in the bucket, you want to make sure that those are there. If you wear a hearing aid, you want to make sure you have extra hearing aid batteries in there. And then that way it's all set and ready to go, and you can grab it and run out the door.
So these are bare essentials. We're not talking about foodstuffs or water.
So they do suggest you put some
bandages.
You can put, that's another recommendation, Band-Aids, Neosporin, things like that. They do say you can try to put 3 days worth of food and water in there, but depending on how big the bucket is, you might end up.
Can you tote it? After you fill it, can you lift it? Yeah.
But they do recommend some of that. Definitely in your home, if you feel that you may. So again, where I live, I'm more likely to get stuck in the house for a couple days. So my husband and I jokingly have what we call in the bottom of our pantry, we call it our apocalypse food. And that's all canned food, ramen, some things that you just could heat up real quick, or just use water to make, like pouches of tuna, things like that. We do have a generator. I know not. I always say generators aren't necessary, but good planning is. So if you are able to get a generator to hold yourself over, that's good too. Or I always say try to, try to make friends with someone with a generator.
I was just going to say, I would imagine that in some areas, neighborhoods would help each other. I know that I have some, I have nerve saying this, but I have some elderly neighbors, that I would want to make sure they were okay, or that they had what they might need. So I think that might be something to encourage, right?
Oh,
to know at least the people to the right and left of you, how situated are they? Is there someone that might need transportation or might need assistance even in ambulating and those kinds of things, huh?
Get out, know your neighbors. I too have an elderly neighbor, and we always are calling, checking up on each other. She has a generator, but she's not able to start it herself. So before a big storm, we're on the phone with each other, and she's like, "Can you come over and start my generator?" And we're like, "Sure thing, we'll be over there."
Yes.
So you get to know your neighborhood, and especially too, I would say maybe you don't need a generator, but and this is sort of stories that we're hearing through the public too, especially after Sandy. People are saying, "Well, I don't have one, but 5 miles down the road, my family lives in a more densely populated area, and they never lose power. They only lose power for 24 hours. So we just plan to stay with them." And it's that's the kind of planning that you should be making. And I know we're only almost 6 years out from Sandy, and I don't want people to lose the knowledge that they've gained from going through Sandy, because I think it's only a matter of time before something like that happens again.
Well, that was a single event. If you remember not this current winter that we're finished with, by the way, announcing we're done with winter. But the year before, right, we had three, an ice storm and a snowstorm and an ice, within sometimes days of each other.
Yeah.
And people were rendered without power and isolated because trees were down and that kind of thing.
And trees came down across roads and people weren't able to get out.
Yes. So it's we always go back to Sandy because that was the superstorm.
Yeah.
But there have been several
smaller events that
remind us that these things are necessary and that we can't get complacent, really.
Yeah.
In terms of, yes.
Yeah. And that's always our fear, too, and that's another reason why we're always going out and talking to people and speaking, because we don't want people to fall into that complacency of oh, that'll never happen again. And it's no, it will and it could. And
folks along the Delaware said that. There was a 100-year, flood in the. Well, it's not going to happen, and it happened twice in 5 years or something like that. So,
Yeah. So, and that's mainly part of our key message is be prepared for yourself, be prepared for your family, have those basic supplies on hand. If you're able to put enough food and water in a bucket and carry it at the same time, make sure you can do that. Make sure your house is, stocked. And especially, if you think you might lose power, try to have food that's not going to need refrigeration. Some of our key messaging is, I had a food refrigerator full of food and then it went without, it wasn't working. My fridge wasn't working for 2 days. And part of it is don't eat any of that. It's really, sad and upsetting, but you got to get rid of all that food.
Wow.
And we have certain guidelines on, if the fridge was, you know, generally full and you had power without this, you know, X number of hours, could it or could it not be safe? And so we give that information out too, because then that's the last thing you need is, like, you think you're through the storm. And
do you have any responsibility? I just happened to think, particularly when you talked about food destroying. How about commercial? I mean, you know, people that are in businesses or people that are, supposing you had to evacuate, the water was rising, or I'm making this up, of course, but, you know, and you had two or three businesses. How do you work with evacuations and that kind of stuff? Or is that mostly OEM, or how does that
work,
Janice?
That's mostly emergency management. Okay. But we are, you know, we're here for whatever they think they need help with. Like, if those people need to evacuate and they need to open a shelter, emergency management gets on the phone with us, and then that's what we would be assisting with.
Because not everybody that works here lives here.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, they would make plans for if they needed to.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
Not everybody that lives here works here. So, yes. That's probably the bigger proportion. Yeah.
So we would shelter people. I mean, you know, we would shelter people whoever needed, regardless. Yeah. If you didn't live here, but you got stranded here because of some kind of emergency and now you have no place to go, like, in emergency management is like, hey, we got to open a shelter for these people. Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, we would definitely be doing that.
Okay. And then, so evacuations isn't something, right, that we're...
We would, you know, assist usually probably in the sheltering piece. We wouldn't be kind of like boots on the ground, you know, actually physically helping people get out. Not anything that we've done, but...
Yeah. Okay. I also had a note here about preparation, generator preparations and recommendations, and where do you live on that spectrum?
So, kind of like what I said before, it's not always necessary to have one, but you do need to plan. And then if you do have one, we want people to really realize that there are safety issues with it. So a little project that we're actually doing with one of our interns is we think after Sandy and we think after some of these big storms that there are more people using generators in Hunterdon
yes.
County. But we want to make sure that people know you have to keep it outside or in a well-vented area because of the risk of carbon monoxide poisoning. There's generally you want to make sure that it's been installed properly in an electrical manner because you don't want to have any type of electrical accident.
A lot of people have not installed generators, though, right? They have portable generators?
Yeah, or sometimes you have a portable generator, and then what is the safest way to use that?
Yes.
So we're doing a little kind of survey now to see, is it true? Are there more people using generators? Are there not more people using generators? I will say some of the surveys we've gotten back, luckily it seems that most of them have had them, like, professionally installed. So we're like, okay, that's good. So we don't have to worry about, like, that kind of danger piece.
Of course you need gas.
Gas, yeah. Some surveys we got back did say propane, that they had them hooked up to propane. So that's, you know, that's like a whole other area of safety.
Yes.
And then mainly the carbon monoxide piece. Like, do you have a carbon monoxide detector that's working then? You know, if it's beeping, you know, to get out of your house, right? So working on those generator safety tips to make sure everybody's, you know, you have the generator now and that's great and you're prepared. But
And far more prevalent in a county like Hunterdon,
yeah,
as opposed to some of our neighbors that this conversation might not need to be had at all.
Yeah, yeah. And I think part of here too, very Hunterdon County specific, is I think it's about 80% of our county is septic or well.
Yes. Ooh,
and
yes.
So, you know.
Another huge piece of preparedness.
Yeah.
How do you get water ready? How do you fill up your bathtub and all those?
Yeah. So we're finding that it's a lot of, like, the septic and well homes that are
yes.
relying on the generator.
Yes.
And again, same thing, even if you don't have the generator, fill your bathtub up, you know, have cases of water at the ready. You know, just you got to be prepared. Maybe you got to brush your teeth with a bottle of water at the sink, but, you know, you're prepared because
yes.
you have those bottles of water.
Yes.
And you have, you know, the tub filled with water, so you're... Flush the toilet and wash your face and, you know,
yes.
do all those other things.
Yes, yes.
So yeah.
Interesting. It's pretty expansive, your job there. Do you have more of you than you're the supervisor of the team, and then,
yeah.
And then what, the team just forms itself, right, when something like this happens?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we have I have a really great team. We have one member who is with us and also with emergency management, which is super helpful, especially you know, passing of information back and forth.
Sure.
We have a health educator, risk communicator, and she does a lot of, like, the public information and warning piece. And when we do those exercises, she's real great with, like, getting us together, reminding us, like, this is how you write a press release. You know, these are the talking points for this type of disease. And, you know, this is the messaging we need to make. We have our MRC coordinator, our Medical Reserve Corps coordinator. She, you know, I always say she keeps the troops rallied. She keeps our volunteers engaged. She makes sure that they have she just put surveys out, too, to see what kind of training the volunteers want.
Tell us a little bit. We've talked about the Medical Reserve Corps a couple times now in our conversation, Janice, but tell us a little bit about the substance of that. What
so
is it?
Medical, I always have, like, my little elevator speech here somewhere.
Okay.
So Medical Reserve Corps, it is a group of medical and community volunteers who are trained to prevent and respond to public health emergencies through preparedness planning, education, community events, and emergency sheltering.
Okay, now and tell us.
Yeah.
Now
so
tell us.
we keep them engaged with all kinds of training. Everything, like I said before, CPR, Narcan. We've done a human trafficking awareness training.
Oh my.
We give them a tour of the 911 communication center, so you can see how that works. You do have to be to volunteer, which, you know, we will take all kinds of volunteers. You can be a nurse, you can be a doctor, you can be just a community person that has no medical experience. And we will train you. We will train you. Trying to think of what's on our calendar. We had a severe weather response training. We're doing doing another training where we teach our Medical Reserve Corps volunteers how to put together that go bag or that go bucket, and then to send them out to the community to teach others on how to do that. We have given them mental health first aid training, is training for if someone that has a mental health diagnosis and maybe experiencing a crisis, how do you help that person? And what are the next steps? And what are the
right crisis within a crisis?
Yeah, crisis within a crisis. And then the next piece to that is psychological first aid, which we're also having a training for them this year. And is for people that don't necessarily have a mental health
background,
but they've now just experienced some type of disaster, and now, you know, how to help them get through that emotionally and mentally.
Well, and situations like this generate fear,
yes,
the unknown, and what's going to happen to me, and does anybody know what to do? You know, if they don't, they might project that others don't, and so forth. I can see a real fear situation.
So this training is, so for example, if we do open a shelter and maybe someone just lost their entire home, this training will, you know, it'll get our volunteers to, you know, maybe help that person, walk them through the steps. Sometimes it's just sitting there and listening.
Yes.
But it's going to give them the training on, like, how to be a good listener, or, you know, maybe you think this person might need help that's beyond you. And then how do you make that referral, you know, without sounding
on the
like,
spot or in
like,
the future.
Yeah. And how do you do it, like, gently without being like, you know, like coming off to like, well, you might need to see someone. Like, how do you approach even that subject?
Yeah.
So that's some of our other training.
I'll tell you what, we've blown through our commercial breaks. And,
oh, geez.
And at this point, I just want to say there, the folks do support Hutton Chamber Radio. They do help, not only, the cost of it, but, really get behind it and say that it's critical and very diverse, the programs here. So I want to acknowledge our sponsors, even though we buzzed on by them. But in the minute, 2 or 3 minutes, I guess we have here, I want to know, how do they find you, or when should they seek you out particularly? What do we do about this Medical Reserve Corps? How can people show their interest there? And you talked about a website and a Facebook page or something, right? So give us some of your contact information.
Yeah, sure. So my contact, you can always email me. It's jclark@co.hunterdon.nj.us.
Okay, so we're saying J. Clark, right?
Yep.
So that's your initial. That's your initials and name at CO, which is just indicates county.
Yep.
And then
Hunterdon.
Then the whole word Hunterdon.
Yep.
There's dots, right? CO.Hunterdon.NJ.
NJ,
because Hunterdon is in New Jersey.
Yep. And then US.
US. And that's the address really for reaching almost anybody in the county. You want
the,
you want an initial and last name, and then county, Hunterdon, NJ, US.
Yep. And then if you're interested in the Medical Reserve Corps, our wonderful Medical Reserve Corps coordinator is Beth Schwartz. And it's the same kind of setup. It's the B Schwartz with a Z, S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z, at the same thing, co.hunterdon.nj.us.
Yes.
We also have a Hunterdon County Facebook page and a Twitter. We also have a regular website. You can go to the regular, the Hunterdon County website, which I think is it just the co.hunterdon.nj.us, and you can find us on there under the Health Department tab.
Okay.
And then there's another tab in there that says preparedness.
The one thing that I think we can all feel pretty good about today, having spent the better part of an hour with you, Janice, is an understanding of what goes in. This is one of these things that I announced at the beginning, you know, the little-known facts or something that people would know nothing about, really, had they not, if we didn't have this program to kind of shine the light behind the scenes. But I think we can all feel pretty darn comfortable that you know what you're doing, that the county is well prepared and never really stops, right? I mean, it's
no.
ongoing, if not education, preparation. If not preparation, action.
Yeah.
And then after the action, it's the debriefing and making everything ever more more effective and efficient and whatever. So I just thank you so much for bringing all this information.
Oh, thank you.
Information to us. Again, Medical Reserve Corps, you're looking for volunteers.
Yes, that's correct.
How about CERT?
CERT, that's with our emergency management partners on the municipal level. That's Community Emergency Response Team. And you can either just go to your municipality's webpage. They should have information
okay.
there. And then if you can't find it, you can always just email me, and then I'll connect you to the correct emergency coordinator for your municipality, and we can get you set up with that too.
Okay.
Yep.
Anything else that we need to let our audience know before we...
No, thank you very much. It was a fast hour.
It was fast hour, but filled with information. And as I say, we know that we're in good hands.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you so very much. So Your County at Work is aired from 4 to 5 on the first Thursday of every month. And the next... The next show that we have in the beginning of May is going to be with our veteran service officer. So we'll learn more about that very active role in the county and our officer that helps our veterans in the county. So thank you so very much.
Thank you.
This is Suzanne Legay saying goodbye for Your County at Work, Hunterdon County, New Jersey. Please visit us next time and thank Hunterdon Chamber Radio streaming live to you on WHCRDB.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump eased off his threats to shut down the U.S.-Mexico border, instead giving Mexico a one-year warning and threatening to first impose auto tariffs before closing the border.
The only thing, frankly, better but less drastic than closing the border is to tariff the cars coming in.
You know, look,
and I will do it.
Yeah.
Just let you know I will do it. I don't play games. I'll do it. So we're doing it to stop people.
And
they give them a one-year warning, and if the drugs don't stop or largely stop, we're going to put tariffs on Mexico and products, in particular cars. The whole ballgame is cars.
A bill ending U.S. support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen is headed to President Trump's desk. The House joined the Senate in passing the bipartisan measure today, although President Trump is expected to veto it. Many U.S. lawmakers blame Saudi Arabia for the death of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Liberty Mutual Insurance knows you're focusing on the road right now, so we'll just describe our newspaper print ad to you. It's a tiny square that's colored a newspaper shade of gray that has you thinking yellow. As the words read, Liberty Mutual customizes your insurance so you only pay for what you need. Now that's the kind of print ad that'll make you glad you still read newspapers.
Go to libertymutual.com for a customized quote and you could save.
Liberty.
Coverage is underwritten by Liberty Mutual Insurance Company and affiliates. Equal housing insurer.
Lowe's knows you're the pro who does it right to find more ways to save because your business depends on it. We do it right, too, with savings every day, plus even more deals during our Spring Black Friday sale. Get $40 off 5-gallon buckets of select paint and stains via Lowe's gift card rebate. Buy three or more Purdy brushes and get 15% instant savings. And get up to 35% off select appliance special values. Do it right for less. Start with Lowe's. Paint and stain offer valid through 410. Purdy and appliance offers valid through 417. Exclusions apply. See store for details. U.S. only.
U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents have arrested over 250 illegal aliens at a business in Allen, Texas. USA Radio Network's John Clemens reports.
ICE officials tell us all of those taken into custody working at CVE Technology, refurbishing electronics, and were here in the U.S. illegally. I spoke to ICE agent Carl Rusnak.
Many of them, if not most of them, will have the opportunity to appear before a federal immigration judge who will decide whether or not they can proceed with their immigration case or whether they should be removed.
I'm John Clemens.
Iowa, Nebraska, and Missouri governors are asking the Army Corps of Engineers to find better solutions for the flooding of the Missouri River. The governors held a press conference asking for short-term fixes to the breached levees, but also wanted some innovative long-term solutions. The flooding has caused over $3 million in damage in the states combined. This is USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290.
Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg sat down with ABC News and George Stephanopoulos to discuss a wide range of topics.